Hey, Headlampers. Welcome to the Headlamp Hour. I'm your host, Nate Jukes, father of five, actuary by day, and a trail runner before sunrise. On this episode of the Headlamp Hour, we talk with Dan Jones. Originally from Whakatane, New Zealand, he now lives and spends most of his time in Wellington with his fiancée, Michelle. Because of our mutual friendship for this episode, I brought on a special co-host, Hayden Hawks. And in this conversation, we talk with Dan's amazing breakout 2023 season, including first at Tarawera 100K on home soil in New Zealand, a fifth place finish at Western States, and an impressive 12th place finish at UTMB just weeks later. We also go into Dan's background with multisport, including a win at the prestigious Coast to Coast in New Zealand on a father-son team when Dan was back in high school. Later on in the conversation, we discuss how Dan thinks about sponsorship opportunities and challenges, and what he's doing besides standing on podiums to build his brand as an athlete. We finish off talking about his plans to do the Western States UTMB double again, and how he plans to best his already amazing performances from last year. Hayden and I certainly enjoyed this conversation with Dan Jones, and I hope you will too. All right, Dan Jones, welcome to the Headlamp Hour podcast. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, thanks. On the other side of the world here in New Zealand, it's a balmy like 28 degrees, probably 80-ish degrees Fahrenheit. It's quite nice. Yeah, how are you guys doing over there?
We're doing great. Yeah, I'm here, Nate Jukes, the host of the Headlamp Hour. And today we have a special co-host guest host, Hayden Hawks. Hayden, how are you doing?
Yeah, doing great, man. Just got back from a freezing cold run, so it's definitely not hot and balmy here in Cedar City, Utah. It's winter time and it's freezing cold outside.
It is really cold. Yeah, when you said 28 degrees, Dan, I was like, yeah, it's 28 here too. But
yeah, probably.
Right. So before we hit record, we already had some back and forth banter. Hayden and Dan, you guys go kind of way back as good friends. I just wanted to start out. I guess like how you two met, just briefly. Dan, if you want to go first and kind of tell the brief story of how you met Hayden.
Yeah, so I think the first time we communicated properly was actually when I had just started my trail running journey. I suppose I'd come over to the United States and I'd competed in Canyon's 100-kilometer race in the hope to get a golden ticket to Western States, and I failed miserably, to be honest. I had an absolute shocker of a race, and I was probably, I was probably in Las Vegas somewhere, sitting next to a pool, maybe drowning my sorrows in a can of beer or something like that. And yeah, I got messaging Hayden. It was pretty random how it worked out, but I think we've got a mutual friend, Scotty Hawker, here in New Zealand, and he said, oh, you should get in touch with Hayden, maybe you can join up for a run. And yeah, we started messaging back and forth, and he's like, bro, Las Vegas is just down the road, 2 hours away, why don't you come over and stay with me for a bit, and we can go for some runs and, you know, recover from the canyons, which I just participated in, and yeah, we can hopefully build that confidence back up. And yeah, that's how it happened.
That's so cool. I love that you can, you know, reach out to basically a competitor and just say like, hey, come stay at my house. So Hayden, is that how you remembered it?
Yeah. It's pretty sweet, man. Like Scotty had reached out to me, and Scotty was like, hey man, there's this really good, like super fast Kiwi guy that's out in the US right now. He just like kind of had a rough race at Canyons. Like you should reach out to him and maybe see if he wants to train with you or something. And I was like, yeah, like I didn't really know who he was. I did a little research just to see like, you know, what Dan's background was and stuff like that, and make sure he wasn't some crazy guy. No, that was the thing is like, you know, that's what I love about the trail running community and the running community in general, is just like everybody kind of is family, you know, for the most part. Like you can pretty much know a person is going to be a good person, I guess, if they are involved in this community for the most part, it seems like. And I was just like, you know, I would love to have somebody come up here, do a little training with me, you know, maybe this guy sounds like a cool dude. And yeah, we just kind of connected right away. He stayed at my house for a couple of weeks, was able to show him some of the area. And yeah, we just kind of have been friends ever since. And it's been an awesome relationship. And it all kind of just started on a whim. You know, that's just kind of how I am, is I love to meet new people, you know, and I love to, you know, be involved with the community as much as possible. And, yeah, I'm just really grateful that I did reach out to Dan.
So am I. So am I. And I'm not going to lie either, because I told my partner, Michelle, that I was just going to head over to some random dude's house. And she might have had some preconceived ideas about what these mountain men in Utah are like. And I'm not sure, but she went with it. And I'm also very thankful for that, because, as I said, we haven't known each other that long, I guess, in the scheme of things. But the last, what is it now, 2.5 years that we've known each other, grown to be really good mates, and spent a lot of times racing and training together since then. So it's been absolutely awesome journey, and I have absolutely no regrets for sending those messages off and catching that Greyhound bus over to Cedar City.
Very cool. And I understand that it wasn't all training and going to Zion's and Bryce Canyon, but that he actually put you to work. You did some yard work in Hayden's yard, right? Can you tell us about shoveling gravel, Dan, for Hayden?
Yeah, I turned up and like he's got half this pile of gravel covering the street. I don't know what the neighbors would have been thinking, but you got to try and earn your keep a little bit. I barely knew him at the time, so I was shove a bit of gravel and help fill in his garden with him. But we did that. It was a good bit of cross training, and as you say, we did some awesome adventures just getting shown around the beautiful area of Utah, Bryce Canyon, Zion National Park, and where else did we go? We went out to, did we go out to the Grand Canyon? Maybe not that trip, but following trips,
Pine
we've
Valley.
Been out there as
we
well.
Pine
Pine
Valley.
Yeah. That's it. Yeah. Just,
I mean, you can really get to know a person, you know, by spending hours shoveling gravel with them. And, you know, maybe it was like a test to see, you know, like who this guy really was. If he was willing to shovel gravel with me all day, I could really see, you know, if I was going to train with a guy like this. Now we spent some hours, you know, shoveling gravel, and I just was like, man, this dude is a hard worker. And, you know, we were, you know, bantering back and forth and sharing stories with one another. And honestly, after that, it was like, wow, man, like this is a guy that I want to train with. This is a guy that, you know, he works so hard, and he's just a great person. And, you know, and I could really tell that, I guess, after that experience. And, you know, we had some great times after that as well. And one thing I learned, you know, when I went to New Zealand last year, is Kiwis love to banter with one another, love to poke fun and kind of make fun of each other. And that's how you know that you're in with Kiwis, is, you know, if they can make fun of you and they can kind of like poke fun at you a little bit, then you know, like, hey, they must like me. And we had a funny experience with that with my dad, actually, and Dan's dad, you know, kind of poking fun at my dad for losing his phone in the lake, you know, while we were fishing. And my dad was like, what the heck, man? Like, why are these guys like making fun of me? He was kind of like upset about it. And I was like, Dad, that means they like you, man. Like, they are making fun of you. They're joking with you. That means that you're in, like, you're in with them. And after that, he's like, oh, cool. Okay. I didn't know that. And that was something that I learned. And, you know, me and Dan like to banter back and forth, but it's all in good fun. And you know, we know that we're good friends because of it.
Love it. That's awesome. So cool. Well, I'm just like third wheeling it here with you two, but glad to bring you two together and have this conversation and learn more about you, Dan. So the opening question, I guess that I have for you is, what roles define your identity and shape who you are as a person?
Yeah, so at the moment I'm stepping into the trail running world. How long have I been doing it for? The year before last year, so 2022 was my first big attempt at trying to, I guess, crack it internationally. And that's, as I said, as we just talked about, where I met Hayden. Had a good go at the Canyons 100K. It didn't work out for me. I had big plans to try and make it to Western States that year through that qualification. But because I didn't really have a very well-rounded race, I went out pretty hard and ended up blowing up at about 60 or 70K I ended up 10th anyway. I wasn't stoked with the result, but anyhow, that's how it goes. So since then, I guess I've come a long way, had some really good results in 2023, and I've pretty committed to making this happen and try and become an elite professional athlete in the trail running space. So that's part of my identity, I suppose, at the moment. I also work part-time 20 hours a week in an office here in New Zealand as a bit of finance admin, and I'm also a coach. I'm engaged now, as of halfway through last year, so that's exciting. When I say we, Michelle is probably more of the one that's making the marriage plans, and we still have to lock in a date for that, but that'll happen at some stage. We've got a big year planned this year, and I'm a son to, well, I've got a brother and sister, son to two awesome parents that live in Whakatane, where I grew up still. So I live in Wellington, the capital here in New Zealand, and it's a bit of a journey up north to go catch up with the family, but love going back there as well.
That's so cool. Well, yeah, sounds like a man of many hats. And I like how you led off with I'm stepping into the trail running world. I mean, based on your results from last year, you've more than stepped into the trail running world, Dan. I think you've firmly established your footing here. And we'll talk about some of those results that you've had that have been super impressive. But first, I want to and by the way, congrats on the engagement. That's really cool. Congrats to you and Michelle.
Thank you.
Hope that everything goes well with the wedding plans and whatnot. So
His partner Michelle too. She is an excellent person and an absolute trail crusher as well. We should have had her on the podcast with Dan because she's one of the best trail runners in New Zealand as well. She is consistently podiuming at a lot of the big races in New Zealand, and she's awesome. Like I got to meet her for the first time this year at Broken Arrow and Western States, and it was a pleasure. It was awesome. She works just as hard as Dan, and so I can, they're a power couple, the power couple of New Zealand.
Yeah,
That's
mate. I was gonna say that we're actually gonna go find her a race in Utah that she can participate in when we come over this year. It's gonna be good.
Oh, really? That'd be awesome. Yeah, well, we'll have to get her on the podcast sometime. You're just the warm up, Dan. The warm
Yeah,
up.
exactly. That's the usual story around here, mate.
She's definitely the better side, Dan. Nice. All right. So yeah, you mentioned it a little bit, but you're from I've learned the correct pronunciation, Whakatane, although it starts with a W, Whakatane, New Zealand. And you grew up around kind of endurance sports, I understand, with your dad, and even your grandmother, was a runner, from what I understand. And so how did that kind of background play into your upbringing as an endurance athlete?
Yeah, well, first of all, great pronunciation on the name Whakatane, my hometown. Growing up, so both my grandparents were runners, or marathon runners especially. So Whakatane is like a really nice community-based town. We've just got an awesome crew of triathletes, multi-sporters, and actually an amazing number of elite athletes that come out of there. I could just name flick off a few names that some people listening to the podcast may have heard of. Hayden Wild, who got bronze in the triathlon at last Olympics. Lisa Carrington, who's just a multi gold Olympic medal earner. She's just so good. Yeah, some of the athletes coming out of Whakatane is just huge, just pulling well above its weight. It's a town of about 20,000 people. And yeah, we just had a really good, like, both my parents, my dad was an international, like, professional adventure racer, so taking part in the likes of the Echo Challenge and Primal Quest, or some of the couple of the big ones in America, some of those big expedition 4 or 5 day, 6 7 day continuous races where you're mountain biking, hiking, kayaking, rafting, all throughout the space of those continuous days, zero, like not much sleep at all. And yeah, it's just a battle of endurance, really. So I guess it's a little bit in the blood, but I also grew up doing so a lot of hunting. My dad was a possum trap, both my parents possum trappers. So in New Zealand, New Zealand as a country, we don't have any native animals apart from a couple bats. We've got native birds and native vegetation. So those are the things that primarily we want to protect in New Zealand, and everything else, like all the animals, arrived on a boat. And because New Zealand doesn't have any like predatory species or native predatory species, everything here is like got pretty lazy. So most of our native birds forgot how to fly. Everything can is just predated on by like all these animals that were brought over. So yeah, that everything there's a lot of pests, and it's basically become a bit of a problem because nothing can, apart from humans, can keep these pests under control. So my parents grew up and they did like a lot of possuming when they're younger, where you go and set traps to catch possums because they eat the baby eggs, or the eggs and the babies and the native vegetation. So yeah, they grew up doing that, and that involved just walking around the hills. So I grew up doing that, pig hunting with my dad, hunting deer. Yeah, so it's pretty crazy, but I really believe that that kind of environment growing up, it really promotes like just walking around the hills for days. And yeah, maybe that contributed to building that good base for later on in life, you know. It's I know Hayden's pretty keen on it as well and grew up doing it. And I know a lot of other athletes in New Zealand that it's kind of normal in New Zealand. It's probably not seen as normal everywhere in the world or in certain places. But yeah, it's kind of our a lot of people do it out in the country. If you grew up in the country in New Zealand, it's a big part of it.
Yeah, I would say it's definitely a way of life here in Utah. Most kids grow up hunting, fishing, hiking, different things like that. Like I grew up hunting my entire life. When I could barely walk, my dad was taking me out hunting in the hills and doing these big, massive days, where we would just spend the entire day barely eating anything and just walking around in the mountains and in the hills. And I think that's maybe one of the reasons why me and Dan connected so much is our adolescent years was pretty similar in that way. And I had the opportunity to meet Dan's dad while I was in New Zealand. We went to Whakatane, and there's a beautiful little beach town called Ohope, which is next to Whakatane. And they took me fishing. We went out fishing on one of their good friend's boat there in the ocean. And me and my dad and Dan and his dad and Austin, his friend, and we had a great time. I mean, it was awesome. And just sharing the stories back and forth about hunting, fishing, and growing up in that area, it really reminded me a lot of where I grew up. And it's really similar to Cedar City in that way is, we have a lot of amazing endurance athletes that have come out of Cedar City, like an 8-time Ironman world champ, that lives here in Cedar City, some professional cyclists, Cam Levins trained here in Cedar City, and lived here for many years. And he's, of course, the North American record holder in the marathon. And so, like, Whakatane and Cedar City remind me a lot of each other. The population's pretty similar. And I think, like, the lifestyle and the way people live is very similar. But if I can ask a question, Dan, tell us a little bit more about your dad and maybe, from what I gathered when I was there is he's a Kiwi legend. I mean, he is one of the greatest multi-sport athletes in New Zealand, and people are still asking him to, be on their multi-sport teams now. And he's, of course, older now, but like, tell me a little bit about that. And maybe tell me a little bit about the coast to coast and how you were involved with that with your dad at an early age and maybe how that kind of helped build your love for endurance sport.
Yeah, for sure. So, as you know, Hayden, my dad's probably he's a battler. Like, he's just a hard, pretty hard dude. He yeah, as I said, grew up doing the possuming, and he was a goat culler at one stage. Just loves being out in the bush. Doing all things pretty tough, And so, yeah, I guess it's one of those things. He grew up doing it, and he got into he was a runner first of all, because multi-sport wasn't around, I guess, when he was quite a bit younger. But then he got into this the sport called multi-sport, as I kind of alluded to before. It's the sport of kayaking, mountain running and cycling. And so there's a big race here in New Zealand called the Coast to Coast, and it's the premier multi-sport race in the world. So athletes that come over, it's kind of renowned as the world multi-sport championship. And it goes from the west coast of the South Island all the way through to the east coast, and you have to cover that distance by, as I said, cycling, mountain run over the divide over the Southern Alps, and then kayak down the Waimakariri River, which is a 70 kilometer grade 2 kayak, and then yeah, you cycle through into town. So right through is, I don't know, a couple hundred, 200 and something kilometers or so to get right through from the west coast to the east coast. And he was the first North Islander to win this race, and it's quite a big feat because it helps so much knowing the course on this race. So he came through on his first attempt, I think he got second, and then he came through the next year and got first. So it was huge, and he hadn't done it since. But then as I was kind of making my mark on the sport, I suppose, I did a bit of multi-sport back in my day, back when I was a teenager and stuff as well. And yeah, I was getting into it. And so we actually ended up teaming up in a relay style for this race in one of my last years of high school. And he did the kayak, and I was more of a runner anyway back then. And yeah, I got stuck into the mountain run and the road bike to the finish. He did the first road bike and the 70 kilometer kayak. Anyway, we did this in a relay team, and we're approaching the race and thinking, oh yeah, we're going all right here. We're entered as a family team, but so a few days before the race, we said, oh, well, we'll give it a crack. We'll enter the open team instead of the family team section. You know, try and take out the whole thing. And it was pretty close. After the first day, I had a bit of a lead, and my dad was had a good kayak, but got caught on the kayak, and it came down to the last ride to the east coast, into Christchurch. And yeah, I managed to, I think, hold off the guy that was chasing us down, and we ended up winning by about 3 minutes. So that was just a real special moment. It was his first time back doing the race since he won it, and to achieve that, you know, first overall team as a father-son team, it was a real special moment for us, just winning the coast to coast like that. And I think we'll always remember that. But yeah, since then, he's kept on going. He's had a couple knee surgeries in the last few years, but he raced actually the Primal Quest over in South Dakota in America back in 2009, and that was my first year of university. So he was mid 50-ish, or just over 50 at this stage, still competing internationally, and just loves the competition, loves the hardness, like loves the tough nature of that sport. And it was cool because I got to watch him do one of his last international adventure races, kind of as he sent me off to university in the States. It was, yeah, my first year at university, and I shot over after watching that race to Eastern Kentucky.
Yeah, thanks for sharing that, Dan. I just really wanted to bring that out, because that's one thing I saw when I was over there, is just the importance of this event, the Coast to Coast. It was amazing. You know, I watched Dan, you know, do some guiding with some people there, and went to the, like, a kayak guiding thing there. And it was just, it's a huge deal in New Zealand. You know, it's really, really a big deal there. And also, I just wanted to point out the relationship that Dan has with his dad, which I thought was just amazing, because I have a very similar relationship with my dad. You know, my dad has always been my greatest supporter. He's always been there for me. And I think it's important for, you know, that fathers and sons to have that relationship. You know, it really helps you develop into the man and the athlete. You know, I know it's helped me develop into the man and the athlete that I am today. And I hope to be the same father for my kids, because I think it's just very important. And I witnessed that, you know, between Dan and his dad when I was over there in New Zealand.
Well, that's super special. That's a really cool story that I didn't know before, Dan. And I'm sure that is just a great memory that you have with your dad winning the Coast to Coast. And then, you know, I'm sure that he's proud of you and your accomplishments to date as well, and just loves following what you're doing, as well as your other family members and stuff. Really cool. So thanks for sharing that, and thanks, Hayden, for bringing that up. I wanted to talk about your kind of year 2023, some of your recent trail running race results. I'm just going to rattle off some of them here. So you started out the year first at Tedoetta, 100K. You beat the other guy here on the call. who got second.
We don't need to talk about that one, man.
Yeah. Let's keep talking about that one, I reckon.
Well, hold on a sec. So, and you got the course record. Then you went on. So that's where you got your golden ticket for Western States, which you got fifth there in the summer. Then you did the double. You went to UTMB and did really well. Got 12th at UTMB, the 100-mile distance there. So just of those first three kind of results, you know, it's obviously a very impressive year that you had, and lots of people, lots of listeners will probably know those things, those first three results about you. But anything you want to say besides rub it in Hayden's face again that you beat him? Anything you want to say about how you reflect on those first three accomplishments from the last year?
We don't rub it in each other's faces. I mean, Hayden beat me. I had a good race there, but it's more so, you know, we're good mates, and it's just a competition that brings out the best in each other. So I think I did some great training with Hayden in New Zealand leading up to that race, and we were both firing, and you know, both had a good time out there. But yeah, I think this 2023, it was just one of those. I'd learned, maybe it's very cliche, but you know, coming into that year, I'd had a couple bad races in 2022, and so I just wanted to really make my mark on the sport. And I felt like, you know, getting off to a good start at Tarawera was great, but it's Western States and UTMB, they're seen as the premier races, right? And so coming over to the States, there was pressure. The pressure was off in some ways, because I'd made it there. I'd gotten my golden ticket. I was going to Western States. I could go and do UTMB. And the reason why I did, you know, the double, it said, oh, you know, should you do the double? It's pretty hard to back up after Western States and UTMB. I want to make my name in the sport, and I want to show that I'm here to compete, and yeah, try and put my name out there, like as one of the small dogs becoming a bigger dog in the sport. So yeah, Western States, it was such a good experience, and I had a decent build up. I got a minor injury beforehand, but didn't really let it affect me too much. Like, it came right by race day, and had a fairly well-rounded race. I kind of hurt my knee in the first part, and that came right, and had a strong finish. So there's room for growth there as well, which is exciting for me. I'm really looking forward to this year, because I know I can improve on things, and that's going to be cool to see. And also UTMB, again, it's just a crazy event. Like, you learn so much the first time round, and I know that I can do better there again as well. So who knows if you do, like, you know, it's ultra running. Not every race goes to plan. So if I do, I do, but I'm going there to really give it my best shot anyway.
So are you doing the double again this year then, Western States?
Yeah. Yeah, I plan to. I plan to. Thinking about it, I just want to give everything I've got at Western States. And then if I can do slightly better in my recovery this year, maybe slightly different build, who knows what can happen at UTMB. I know how hard it is now. It's just one of those things where I just think, if I can just make that race feel a little bit easier by doing slightly small things different, well, it's never going to be easier, but if it can go slightly more to plan, then the result can be like huge chunks of time. That's my feeling for it anyway.
Yeah, I just want to say something. You know, Dan is a dog, man. Dan's not afraid of anything. He goes out there and he puts himself in the middle of things, and he's a dog, man. He fights to the finish. I witnessed it three times, you know, at Tarawera, of course. I was running with Dan. We were, you know, ahead by a long ways in that race, you know, just running together, having a good time. And then he just turned on the jets. Like, I just remember, like, I had a slow, a little dip of energy, and Dan just took off. And just seeing him, like, crush those home trails. Because, you know, what a lot of people don't realize is like Tarawara is pretty close to where Dan grew up in Whakatane. So it was like a home race for him, you know, and to see him out there just crushing, you know, amongst his peers and his community, and just seeing him move like he did on those trails. I mean, it was a sight to see. It was awesome to see. And I just couldn't stay with him. I had a great race. You know, we both ran really fast. And I think it's one of the maybe the more underappreciated performances of last year. I mean, Dan's time on that course was just crazy. I mean, it was crazy how fast we were running and how, you know, fast he ended up finishing and you know, beating me. And then, of course, at Western States, you know, before I busted my knee, me and Dan were running together for a period of time there trying to work off of each other. But of course, I just couldn't do anything because my knee was literally broken and I ended up having to drop out. And then, yeah, but being there to witness that at Western States and seeing him fight, you know, on that day, it was just really, really cool to see. And then at UTMB, I actually crewed Dan at UTMB. And that was an honor for me to crew him and see him fight just the whole day. I could tell, you know, he wasn't having the day that he wanted to have, but he just kept fighting and fighting and fighting. And he got to that finish line, you know, and had a really strong performance, especially coming off of Western States. And so just really excited to train more with Dan this year and to see him do even better, you know, at the double and see what he can do this year.
Yeah, that was really something. Hey, it was UTMB was, it was hard. It was hard backing up, but it was so good having Hayden there, just a wealth of experience, being over that course before, knew what I had to do, got me in and out of those aid stations as efficiently as possible, but also making sure I had everything on board and everything I needed to get me through to that next aid station and then the finish line. It was really special. And yeah, also going back to Western States as well, because Hayden and I were running together for a brief period there until, as you say, Hayden's knee stuffed out or completely. I know it wasn't good the whole time at all anyway. But yeah, the help and the support like of loved ones and friends and family that I had at both those races is just crazy. My parents actually came over to Western States and they crewed me. Michelle came over, not with them, but slightly before them, and she was on the crew as well. So it just makes all the difference just having someone there to that you can look forward to seeing aid stations if you can have it at those crewed aid stations. It's just so special.
Dude, you were in the zone at UTMB. It was like pain cave. I had never seen somebody stay in the pain cave for so long, and you just kept going, and like you were just kind of like there were times when you weren't even there, and I was just like, I don't even know if he heard a word that I just said because you were in such pain just the whole time. I mean, tell me a little bit about that. Like, tell us a little bit about that. Like, how was it being in that pain cave, and like how were you able to stay in that pain cave for so long and fight through it? Because it really stood out to me and it made me want to be a stronger person and learn how to deal with that pain cave better.
Oh, mate. Yeah, it was just one of those things. I was deep inside that cave for certain points. And then I saw glimpses of light where I was like, maybe I'm going to escape for a little few seconds or minutes here. And, you know, it's just the ups and downs of racing, isn't it? It's like, I was dark in that pain cave going up Col de Ferret, mm-hmm. The highest summit on the UTMB course. And once I got through there, and it was actually the sun was just starting to rise at that point, and I'm like, okay, we can do this. And then I just made my way down into La Foulée. Oh, huge.
Did you have any
downhill
thoughts, or like what were you thinking about during that? Like, because I think a lot of people have to be in that, and like there's certain things that help them, right, to get through it or get out of it. Like, was there any thoughts that you can remember that helped you?
It's so hard to remember, and it's so hard to explain what you put yourself through, I think, when you try and explain it to people and how hard it is and why you do it. But for me, it's just like, I'd committed to this thing where, and it wasn't purely extrinsic motivation at all, but I'd committed to trying getting around UTMB as fast and as best as possible. Like I had all these people supporting me, and I knew that like people have put so much into me. I put so much into my training, and I'm here to achieve, what I set out to achieve. So it's kind of that motivating factor for me is just like, you've got to give everything you can throughout this whole race. Otherwise, you're just going to be left disappointed. Like, I want to achieve something big in the sport in every race that I do. It's weird. I'm sure other people have different reasons, but I just love that feeling of just laying everything on the line and just making sure I achieve what I guess I've got the potential to achieve. And that's why it's annoying when you have those injuries and you get that those bouts of sicknesses, because those are moments left where you're not really up, achieving what your to your potential. So that's why it's frustrating as athletes when that happens. But when you come through the other side and you get better and you're healthy, it's the best feeling ever, right? When you're just running smooth and you're training well, and then you go out and execute that perfect race, and then you're like, that's it. I just gotta nail it and achieve this a time after time. I've got this recipe now for success, and I want to do that. And that's like when you're going through those hard races, it's like, okay, am I going as hard as I can go right now? And if not, like, what can I do to be going slightly better? And so I think, it's just trying to be as good as you can get at that time. And that's kind of what just keeps one foot in front of the other. And you get to that next aid station, you do what you have to do, and you get out and go.
I completely understand, dude. It's exactly how I feel. It's exactly the mindset that I have. And it's hard to explain it to other people, but I think that's why we feed off of each other so well, is we both have that same mindset and we understand. I don't want to sound weird here, but we understand each other, and I think like most, pro runners do. They understand and they feel that same way for the most part. Not everyone. But a lot of the best feel that way and they have that same mindset. So thanks for sharing that.
Yeah, I think it's impressive that you were still able to put together an amazing performance there at UTMB, especially after, so soon after a good performance at Western States. I don't know what your A goal was necessarily at UTMB. I imagine maybe like a top 10 finish or maybe podium. But once, your A goal is out of sight in a race, then you slip down to your B goal and your C goal and your D goal. And then, it's just so much harder to stay motivated. And so I think it's, like I said, just impressive that you bent a little bit, but you didn't break, right? Right. You didn't like completely fall off. And so that's just so impressive to me and very admirable. So thanks for kind of explaining your thought process through that. Very cool. So I want to shift gears here and talk a little bit about what you do for work. So you mentioned it. You mentioned that you coach, and that you work part-time 20 hours a week as a finance person. Can you talk to us just a little bit about what you do in your work?
Yeah, no worries. It's nothing too exciting, mate. So I work for it's actually a very cool company, Sharesies, online investment platform here in New Zealand and Australia. And it's an awesome little company. It's when I've been working there for nearly 3 years now, and I think when I started, I was about employee number 140, and it's grown a lot. But yeah, basically, I'm just paying suppliers, entering invoices, that kind of thing. Helping out with some of the month-end financial accounts and that. And yeah, that's me. I just really it's great, but I can work remotely, work flexibly. It's pretty sweet. And then for the rest of my time, I am a coach. So I coach at multi-sporters and distance runners. And yeah, I. What else do I do? Also a guide. So in the summer months, I guide across the coast to coast run course, Goat Pass, and those are big days actually. So trying to fit everything in is it's a bit of a juggle, but I don't have any kids just yet. Hopefully in the future, but not just yet. And obviously the professional trail running is going to be a big part of my future. So I want to prioritize that coming up along with my coaching. But when that crossover happens, there's yet to be determined.
That's really cool. Yeah, so it sounds like a typical desk job like I have.
What do you do, mate?
I'm an actuary, so I don't know. Do you know what that is?
Yeah, I know what that is. Yep.
Okay, cool. Then I don't have to explain it. But yeah, I work for a company called Prudential. You might have heard of it, but life insurance, annuities, the math and statistics behind it. But yeah, I work remotely. And it's great. It gives me a lot of extra physical capacity to to run. It's a good recovery job. But anyways, yeah, I want you went into the guiding, and I wanted to talk about that a lot. So right now it's the summer there in New Zealand, and I think you just kind of finished this up, but top sport. It's a really big deal in New Zealand. We've already talked a little bit about multi-sport, how big of a deal it is there. Can you talk briefly about that experience that you've had guiding with top sport and what your role has been there?
Yeah, so Topsport is one of the bigger guiding companies, but like based their the business is based around coast to coast. As Hayden was saying, coast to coast has gotten huge in New Zealand. There's an industry built around it, the multi-sport industry. And so I got to meet the Topsport crew when I first did coast to coast. Maybe I did it individual. I did it individual the longest day back in the day when I was doing more multi-sport. And yeah, I met the crew down there and I was like, oh, these guys are really nice people. And they obviously have a great business and they're so revered in the community because they put everything into creating good kayakers, good coast to coasters, because people need a grade two certificate to kayak down the Waimakariri River. They need to be ticked off to make sure they're competent so they don't go and drown or create disasters on race day for the race organization. And so yeah, Top Sport, they provide that service. And so when I first met them, I was like, cool. And then randomly one day I got a message. They said, oh, Dan, do you want to come down and do the run as part of our Top Sport team? Kate Canby, she's one of the owners. She'll do the kayak, and we've got an awesome cyclist here in Christchurch who will be in the team as well. And so I said, yeah, that sounds like a fun time and cool gig to get to be a part of. So I went down and raced coast to coast. We won overall as a mixed team, so we were again top team. Kind of reliving those days of the team events that I'd done with my father, but this time it was a three person mixed team. And after that, I think we did it for another year, and then they said, Daniel, we might have an opportunity for you to be a guide if we can secure a consent to do some run course guiding. So taking other athletes, other potential coast to coasters over Goat Pass to show them what it is to do this run. Because there's so many beginners out there who don't have the first clue about crossing rivers and mountain safety and how to trail running and this technical type running. Because I'm yarning about Goat Pass, but people probably don't understand what Goat Pass is. So basically what you're doing, there's no marked trail. It's a valley you follow up the western side, over the divide and down the eastern side. And so yeah, there's no marked route. You're jumping from rock to rock, big boulders that you're scrambling up and over, very technical, rooty, slippery sections. And so yeah, we're showing athletes or potential athletes what it's like to cross that mountain safely. And so that's what I've been doing. We leave Christchurch at 6 a.m. in the morning, and so my fastest time across that pass is 2:44 on race day, and some of our guided trips last 8 to 9 hours. But we've got very varying levels of abilities, but we take a couple guides across so we can split the groups into two and make sure people are getting the most out of their days, learning how to cross the rivers safely, get up and over there and have a good time while doing it. So yeah, it's a big day, but you get a lot out of it because you hear so many cool different stories and you meet different people who have their own goals and aspirations for coast to coast. And it's just like anything, just like Hayden was saying, like our trail running, our our community is so good. Like we've got to build it up, and we've got to, you know, bring people up that are wanting to have a go to do it. And that's the service that Top Sport provides, as well as their kayaking services as well. So it's really cool.
Yeah, we were living actually in Christchurch last year, you know, New Zealand summer, our winter. We're like, we're going to escape the winter here in Utah and go down to New Zealand. We were living in Christchurch, and me and Dan got to train a lot together down there. And we had a day where we went up to Arthur's Pass, which is near where the Goat Pass is, that Dan guides at. And man, those trails are gnarly. they're pretty technical. We didn't do that exact trail, but we did some other ones near there. And it was slow go, and it was gnarly, but it was awesome. Such a beautiful area, amazing mountain passes and just big peaks everywhere. Like Ruth Croft, who's actually another amazing ultra runner and trail runner from New Zealand, legend of the sport. She lives just near there in Arthur's Pass, and she does a lot of her tramping and runs and multi-day stuff up there in Arthur's Pass. So follow her Instagram, and you can see kind of what that area looks like and what those trails are like. And I guess, Dan, so after our big day up there in Arthur's Pass, we went to this place called Sheffield Pies. Tell us a little bit about Sheffield Pies. I still like think about that, those pies, and how amazing they were. And like, honestly, I would make a trip back to New Zealand just to partake of some of those pies, because maybe I was just hungry after a big long day of training, but man, that those pies hit the spot. They were amazing.
Yeah, Sheffield pies, world renowned pies apparently. There are some good ones in that Canterbury region, to be honest. They got some very good shops. And New Zealand as a country, we pride ourselves on, you know, pie, good pie.
It's a meat pie though, right? It's a meat pie, pie.
A meat pie.
Like
you can get your fruit
American.
Pies.
Yeah,
exactly. But you go to any gas station here in New Zealand, any gas station, any cafe, bakery, you'll have pies to choose from, right? So that's a bit of a different thing here. It's pretty easy, quick and go, get a pie, you're sorted. You know, that's your morning tea, your lunch, pie and a V.
I lived off of those things when I was in New Zealand, and that was my recovery food after like a run, you know, good carbs, good protein. Like, man, I love the pies down there. I can't wait to go back to New Zealand just to eat the pies.
What was your favorite, mate? I remember did you get the apricot chicken and camembert
chicken
or something? That was
apricot,
it.
Man, that thing at Sheffield Pies. Oh,
yeah.
That thing hit the spot. It was so good, man. Like, my mouth is watering just thinking about it right now.
I don't know how I remember that, but I remember your pie, and you're like, oh, this is a bloody
probably
good pie.
Because I just kept talking about it the entire ride home. Like, you know, I literally talked about it for hours after our run.
Oh, that's a pretty good plug for Sheffield Pies, though. So if anyone's stopping through Sheffield on their way from Christchurch to Arthur's Pass, be sure to stop in at Sheffield Pies.
We should
there
get
you go.
Sponsored by them, man. That would be a good sponsorship.
You'll just have a big pallet of pies arriving to your home in Cedar City every half a year. Chuck them in the freezer. You're good.
You could eat them at UTMB, man. Maybe that'd help you get around the loop faster, eating some Sheffield pies.
Well, you know, it's actually not a bad race food. I've heard of Coaster Coasters. They get out of that 70K kayak, and they've got still a 70-kilometer time trial into town, into Christchurch. They munch down a lukewarm pie just before they jump on the bike for the energy to get into Christchurch. I've heard quite a few, even the elite athletes, do that. So you might be onto something there, Hayden.
Yeah.
Very cool. Well, yeah, shout out to Sheffield Pies, the first free advertisement here on the Headlamp Hour podcast. But so Dan, you mentioned this, like you're doing a lot of stuff, you know. You're working part-time, you're coaching, you're doing this guiding, at least during the summer. And you mentioned kind of briefly, like in the future, you'd like to kind of move towards and put more energy into, you know, your trail running, your professional trail running and coaching. So I guess, how do you, you know, balance those things now, and how do you see those things balancing out in the next, say, 2 to 3, 5 years?
Yeah, so that's what I mean by like I'm just almost new to stepping into the sport because going into Western states and stuff, like not many people would have maybe even had me in the top 10. And that's interesting, but that's just because I haven't really raced the big races before. And I think showing that I was really willing to travel to the US, travel to Europe, hit the big races, that more opportunities are going to arise for me. Like I'm going to do the same this year. I've got some big races planned, even more maybe, because I want to stay around in Europe afterwards and potentially do some other big races. But you can only do so much, and so that's why I think I will have to transition a bit of my time at some stage down the track so that I can focus on my recovery and do everything that an elite and a professional trail runner has to do to be at the top of their game. And so that's why, there will be changes in the future, but it just depends when those changes happen with maybe a few different contracts that come my way. And that's what's exciting because, yeah, it's just one of those things you got to work on. And we've got some cool things that I'm working with my agent, like doing different things like articles and written articles around basically my training, my racing life, different tips and topics that we talk about. And yeah, so we've got that, and it's just building up, I guess, a bit of a presence in that trail running community, and that's starting to happen. That's why I'm, that's part of the reason why I might be here today. It's going out to the big space out there in the old world of podcasts. So that's hey, you're probably offering up a big opportunity for me today, Nate.
Well, I hope so. I hope this reaches, thousands, for you. But yeah, actually, this is a perfect transition into I was wanting to talk about your Substack or what we might call a blog. You kind of seems like you kind of already answered this, but I wanted to ask you one, kind of why did you decide to start this and what's important to you about sharing your knowledge of running in this format? Like, for example, you have a recent article on there called Lessons from the Long Run, and you wrote, or sorry, no, that's what your blog or your Substack is called. The title is Lessons from the Long Run, and one of the articles on there recently is called Diving Helps Me Be a Better Runner, Cross Training at Its Best, right? So you're sharing this knowledge about how you are cross training in maybe a unique way by diving, right? And how that is beneficial to you as a runner. So I guess, yeah, those questions, why did you decide to start this blog or Substack, and what's important to you about sharing your knowledge of running and training in this format?
Yeah, I think there are certain things that people see on social media platforms and things like that that maybe they realize that's part of your lifestyle, but a lot isn't expressed, or it's very limited what you see in social media. So I think this is a really nice platform for people to follow along and actually get a bit more of a look into maybe my lifestyle, but also, what parts of my life like look like as a trail runner. So on social media you might just see a certain run where, oh yeah, feeling good today, blah blah blah, I ran this pace. But the Substack article, and it can actually dive a lot deeper. And the article that you mentioned around diving makes me a better runner, sure, it's actually got a lot of chat around the guiding I do and what I think, the benefits are of, the strength training of getting out for time on your feet. And yeah, sure, diving is a great form of, I guess, exercise because you're out there doing something. You're not sitting on the couch. It's maybe, for me, maybe not the best form of recovery, but I actually get a lot out of it. Maybe what would you call it? Spiritually, like it's a great form of not meditation for me, but a way that it just clears my mind, I suppose, because I can't have a phone in front of me. You're immersed there in the underwater environment and there's just no distractions. So for me, it's just an awesome way to get away from it all sometimes. And people don't really probably aren't going to see that in social media, but if they can read it, like, you've always got time if you're having a coffee in the morning or whatever, sitting on the toilet. I don't know what you do, but you get your phone out, you have a read, and it's like, oh yep, that's a easy way to get a bit of an understanding about something that you're interested in. A lot of people love ultra running, don't they? Like, It's a growing sport, and as I said, like community wants to learn something different about different people, and that's a great way for them to do it.
Yeah, two things on this. I think Dan's onto something on both things. Is I listened to a podcast recently, actually, with Dylan Bowman on Free Trail, where he interviewed the past like athlete manager for Red Bull, and the guy talked a lot about long form content, and how that's kind of the most important thing. Is like Dan said, you have that short form content on social media like Instagram, but that doesn't really get the point across. You know, people see it for a split second and then they forget about it. But long form, meaning like, you know, blogs like Dan is doing and write-ups and YouTube channels and videos and podcasts, you know, stuff like that. It really reaches out to people and it helps them learn and, you know, become, I guess, true fans of an individual or of a certain podcast or whatever it is. And it was a very interesting podcast to listen to, and it really actually struck me. And that's why I've actually been working with some friends and different people here. And one of the reasons I wanted to actually get involved with the podcast here with Nate and maybe be a guest every now and then is because I think it's important to have that long form. You know, I'm going to be coming out with some videos about my rehab from knee surgery. And you know, with a few episodes about Black Canyon and then on my quest to Western States. And I think that will really reach people. And I think the second thing that Dan brought up that I thought was really important was cross training. You know, I started incorporating cross training about 4 years ago in the form of biking and hiking. And it really does do a lot for you. You know, it's a great way to actively recover. You can do a lot more on the bike than you can running, you know, because there's no impact. Or like diving, you can be out there for hours and not feel beat up after. You know, it can be a spiritual experience, a form of meditation. You can enjoy it with other people, you know, that are maybe outside of the sport, and actually helps bring them into the sport. I love cycling. It's something that I definitely have incorporated a lot into my training, and it's made me a more well-balanced athlete and a stronger athlete, and I'm actually getting fitter from it. You know, I love hiking and hunting with my dad, and that's a huge part of my cross training as well. And even chasing my kids around, you know, going on hikes with my kids. You know, like me and my son are actually doing a night hike tomorrow night, you know, here in Cedar City. He really wants to go out in the night and use the headlamp, and we're gonna have a good time out, you know, night hiking. And I think little things like that, you know, like Dan said, gets you off the couch, and it's active recovery. And it also gets you comfortable with just being outside for long periods of time.
Well, yeah, Hayden, you hit the nail right on the head with the long form content thing. That's the exact episode that I was thinking of the Free Trail podcast where Dylan talked with the prior Red Bull athlete manager. And Dan, I just had to wonder, like, if that's kind of what you were going for, or like, you know, what you had talked about with your agent about how you can put yourself out there, because it seems like, you know, in this day and age, you have to be more than just an athlete that stands on podiums. You have to be interesting, and you have to be relatable, and you have to have a story and be able to tell that story. And it's really cool. You know, when you listen to a podcast or when you watch a YouTube channel over and over again, you really start to feel like you have a relationship with that person, and it's really cool. You become a big fan of that person, you know? And so I wanted to lead this into kind of a talk about sponsorships. So you seem obviously like a very grateful, down-to-earth guy, you know, who just loves running and would probably do it for free, but you know, that's obviously not the world that we live in. And so you're with ASICS New Zealand right now, and you've also picked up a fuel sponsorship in Precision Fuel and Hydration. So congrats on those two. But what can you say maybe about you know, in the past, the difficulties that you've had or that you've seen others have in getting sponsorships, and that may be unique to someone from New Zealand as opposed to an American or say European athlete at your same level of achievement.
Yeah, it's a good question, and it's You know, it's one that you have to ask yourself as well when you're beating your head against the wall, looking for looking for sponsorships, and maybe it's not going your way. But I think there's a certain amount of, really having to commit. And as an athlete from New Zealand, we don't have the biggest market size here in New Zealand, and even Australia. Australia's pretty decent size, you'd say, especially in landmass. But yeah, in terms of population, we are battling against that. So yeah, it's one of those things. I think if you put yourself out there, and for me, traveling to the US, traveling to Europe, getting well known in those spaces, in the trail running space, at a global level rather than just a New Zealand level, then I think that's certainly a way that you can make it happen. And people have done it from New Zealand, like Ruth Croft and Scotty Hawker. They've gone out and achieved awesome results, and they've gone on and been sponsored, like had a good sponsor that they've worked well with. So maybe it's a little bit more difficult. Like I don't want to say like it's, oh, because we're from New Zealand, it's bloody hard to become a professional athlete. Yeah, it might be a little bit harder, but you can certainly put steps in place, and I feel like, I'm doing that. And Jace, who was actually my athlete manager at Essex, New Zealand, he's gone on to become my agent because he saw potential there that, we couldn't really make this work on a global level. I've got different stories. I'm not just a one trick pony with running. I've got cool things I do on the side as well that some people might find interesting. Oh, like that guy, he does a bit of diving and hunting, and he's an outdoorsy dude, and he also is a trail runner. It's not a unique story, but it's just something a bit different, I suppose. And yeah, I think the more I put myself out there and just showing up to the big races, and it's all about results as well. I know that this year isn't going to be another good year. I'm just going to say it's going to be a good year. I don't know if it is, but it will be. And yeah, if things go my way, then things will continue to develop in that sponsorship space. I'm pretty sure of that.
Absolutely. I love that perspective, and I love, like I said, your gratitude towards it and your humility towards it. Hayden, I wonder if you have any thoughts on this as you've talked with Dan or other international athletes about the sponsorship issue.
Yeah, I think now we live in a world, where you can see everything on social media, YouTube, all those different things. And I think the athletes that are not getting involved with that, that maybe are outside of big marketplaces and they're not putting themselves out there. They're not going to the biggest races in the world and performing, they're not, trying to promote themselves, on social media and long form, content are the ones that are maybe suffering, but it's really their own fault. And Dan is not doing that. Like Dan is putting himself out there. He's going to the biggest races. He's really striving to be the best athlete he can be and to show people that, hey, I'm here and I'm one of the best in the world. And I'm also going to work my butt off to promote myself and to do all the little things that I need to do. And I think that's what it takes. Young athletes reach out to me all the time and ask how they can get sponsored. And a lot of it comes down to and how you put yourself out there and how you connect with people. You connect with brands. You, like I said, sign up for the biggest and baddest races in the world, and you take risks. And if you're not willing to do that, then you're probably not going to pick up sponsorship, and you're not going to have those opportunities because brands look at that. They look at you being a good person as well, a person that can connect with communities, a person that is real, that, has organic content and is not fake. And I think it's important to not, to be that way. If you're yourself and you're striving to be the best version of yourself, people will see that. It might take a little longer than some other people. But I think if you're doing that, brands will see it. And also, when it's all said and done, you do have to podium. you do have to perform. And, you know, that's the best way to be shown or to be seen is by being on that podium and consistently being on that podium year after year after year at the biggest races in the world.
Yeah, I think that's right. And it just shows like you've got to start somewhere as well. You don't expect to, you know, have it all come all at once when you're starting out. You've got to put in the graft. You've got to put in the races at your local events and, you know, make your mark on the community that you've got around you on the local races. And then, you know, when you're doing well at those races and you decide to explore maybe abroad or across state or whatever you're doing, but then, you know, you build yourself up. And I think, you know, you can't really expect to it come within, you know, the first few months if you're like, oh, I have one good race. But if you can start putting those races together and, you know, making a name for yourself or getting your story out there, then that's going to start happening for you.
Yeah, you got to keep showing up. You know, that's the thing is these guys, they'll put themselves into the big races and then they'll have one or two bad performances and then they'll get scared and they'll stop, you know, going after those. But no, like nobody, most people don't hit it right on the head, you know, their first time. And you need to keep showing up and keep going back and keep going back and learning and growing and finding out ways to get better. And it's hard work, you know, like this business, it's hard work. And you have to be willing to work hard. And if you're not willing to work hard, you're not willing to put in the grind and put in the hours, you know, not just with training, but with everything, you're not going to get the results or you're not going to, you know, get the sponsorships and different things that you want. And just remember, like, yeah, work hard, show up, and, you know, continue to stay positive and be patient. And it'll happen over time. And I've seen too that a lot of people are so concerned or so worried about getting sponsored. Sometimes like you need to just put in the work and stop thinking about it so much. And that's a way, and usually it'll come. that's usually when it usually comes, it seems like.
Well, I think this conversation has been really valuable for a lot of our listeners, probably, especially me, like someone who's new to trail running and trying to, you know, step into that world. So selfishly, I'm grateful for the words of wisdom that you two have given me on this topic. But I love that. And I love what you said, Hayden, just at the end there, you know, maybe stop worrying about it as much and worry more about, you know, falling in love with the sport and falling in love with the training and the process. So definitely a nugget of gold there. All right. As we wrap up here, I wanted to go on to a bit of a lighter topic. Dan, we're going to quiz you on some New Zealand lingo or cultural things. So can you please explain to us the meaning of the phrase sweet as? What does that mean when somebody says sweet as?
Well, it's not sweet ass, which is what probably a lot of people may think it is. Sweet, or no, what would you say? Sweet ass. No, sweet ass. Sorry. You guys would say sweet ass. But it's sweet as, like it's sweet. Maybe you've heard of the phrase sweet as sugar, baby, or something like that. So it's like sweet as would just mean it is ideal. It's like ideal. It's perfect. Oh, it's bloody good. Or it's good as gold. Good as gold. Have you heard of that one?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like that. Sweet as.
Good. All right, cool. Can you please use it in a sentence? Or if I say, oh, like, or, you know, like your friend says something, what would you say sweet as to?
Oh, right. I get you. Hey, bro, can you come over here and help us like dig up all these rocks from the ground and chuck them on your garden? Yeah, bro. Sweet as.
Chuck rocks on your garden. What the?
Oh, isn't that what you got me to do?
Nah, dude, I love the phrase sweet as. I've actually picked that up since I came back from New Zealand. It's so easy to use and it just makes sense. It's so like that, just as, like, cause you can say like, oh, that's cool as, or that's sweet as, or
yeah, as, I think that's, you know? I think that's the key thing there.
Yeah, and I just love that phrase, man. It's something I've definitely picked up.
All right, one more. If a trail is called a track in New Zealand, then what do you call a track? Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. That makes actually sense. That makes sense. You just call it a running track.
Okay.
Like the circle? The circle's a
Yeah.
running track?
Yeah, running track
So
or
like,
400-meter track.
well, high school or the, or you don't call it high school, you call it like secondary school, right? But
No, we call it high school.
you do? Okay.
Yeah, or secondary school. Yeah, correct.
Right. So to for the listeners who didn't catch that, in New Zealand, I believe trails are called tracks. Is that right?
Yeah, that's pretty correct.
Okay. And so actual tracks, right, that you run around in the oval, the athletics oval, are just called tracks as well, or running tracks.
Yeah, pretty much. Hey, not many people like refer to tracks because not many people run. Not many high schools have a synthetic track in New Zealand because it's too poor. You know what poor is? It's like poor. It's
It's
yeah, there's
grass
a few.
tracks. Don't you have grass tracks
Yeah,
there?
mainly. So most schools have grass tracks, if anything, but
That
there'll
would
be
be
a
sweet.
there's a few hills, hills, few schools that have like the synthetic, like the Mondo tracks. So it's quite interesting. I think I first ran on a synthetic track when I was about 16 or 17. Yeah. I was trying to get a decent time to go to university. And for my 3,000-meter time, so I rocked up to this track. I think I just bought my first pair of spikes at the age of about 16, and I needed to get a good 3,000-meter time. So I just went out and tried to run 3,000 meters by myself, and it was a crap time. It was like 9 minutes 20 or 9 minutes 30 or something anyway. So it wasn't great. It wasn't a great showing, but that was my first experience on the old synthetic track, Mondo track.
Wow, so you went out because you wanted a time for to get into college, and you just went out and ran a time trial by yourself.
Oh, not a time trial, but I think it was just like some random like club meet where
It was a meet.
there were like people, maybe that it was a handicap race or something pretty random, I remember, because there was no one that I ran with. I was just running by myself.
Gotcha.
It's pretty strange, but I was trying to get a good time so I could show all these university coaches in the States, like, oh, this guy's a good guy to pick up, and here I am running like a slower than what probably 12-year-old girls are at, high school in the States.
Hey,
Yeah,
whatever works. Eastern Kentucky, to be fair, is a good distance university. They always put a, I feel like they always had a good team. You know, as obscure as it sounds to a normal person, if you're in, me and Hayden went to Southern Utah University, also a little bit more of an obscure school with, but also had a good strong distance program. And I remember seeing Eastern Kentucky at the big meets doing well too. So.
we would always go back and forth with them at nationals, I remember. Like, they would beat us by a couple points, or we would beat them by a couple points. And, we were probably running against Dan. We didn't even realize it.
Mate, I would have been sitting on the sidelines as reserve or something. I never raced nationals, but you boys were well above my caliber at university, that's for sure.
Well, all's well that ends well, right? You're in it now, and you're crushing it. So, anyways, looking ahead to 2024, so we've already talked about how you're going back to Western States and UTMB, so that's really cool. But you're also racing Tarawera again in just a few weeks now.
Yeah, it's not too far away. So, oh, hopefully can follow up on the result from last year and have a good showing there this year again. And then yeah, I'm actually planning on racing there, and then end of April rocking up to the Canyons 50K and using that as a bit of a build up race and see where I'm at for Western States. Hopefully going head to head there with my boy Hayden. Hey.
That's right, dude. Well, I'll be running Canyons 50K as well. It's a competitive field as usual, but it'll be fun to race each other again and have you come to my home turf. Well, not my home turf, but to my side of the world and actually be healthy this time. No.
Oh, here's the excuses coming out. I knew it would happen.
Hey, dude, I'm getting fit, dude. You better be on your A game, buddy. You better be ready. No, I'm really excited for you to come out and do that. And then we've been talking back and forth, of course, over the last months. And Dan's actually going to come over to Utah and train with me after that for a couple months before Western States. And me and him are going to get fit, you know, and hopefully Nate as well. Nate's running Black Canyon, you know, Nate's got a shot of getting a golden ticket there at Black Canyon. I got to get a golden ticket too. But, you know, as long as that all works out, me and Dan are going to, and Nate are going to train together here in Cedar City and get ready to rock Western States this year. So like, tell me about that, Dan. Are you pretty excited to come out and train with us here in Cedar City? Like, what are you looking forward to the most?
Oh, I'm joining the Cedar crew. It's going to be so good. I'm really looking forward to that, mate. I've got great memories, obviously, of you showing me around the first time around. Yeah, we'll see track up the back, out the backyard you got there, and Zion and Bryce, and it's going to be cool. Michelle, my partner, well, Hayden already knows this, but just explaining it to the listeners that she's coming over as well, so she can explore those places that I've yarned about over the last couple of years. So that's very exciting for all of us, and yeah, we're really gonna build a really good foundation up over the next few months, so we can build on top of that when we get into that really specific heat training and get into those canyons, aren't we?
Yeah. Of course, here in Cedar City, we sit at about 6,000 feet. So we're going to get some altitude training in. We can drop down to St. George, get some good heat training in. And then, of course, we'll go to Zion, the Grand Canyon, all really close to here. So, and eat a lot of really good Mexican food. I know how much Dan loves the Mexican food.
Yeah, I look forward to that every time I come to America. I've got great memories from my university days of, you know, sinking a few margaritas and eating those nice corn chips. Oh, what do you call them? Yeah, corn chips and salsa.
Tortilla chips.
Oh, tortilla chips. Yeah. So that's going to be awesome. And, you know, it's great just getting a long, hard run done and sitting down and having some good Mexican, isn't it? Like, I remember it's a very fond memory actually from 2 years ago when we did like a 50K in Zion Park, and we both got pretty dehydrated that day. And we ended up getting to the halfway point, which was right down in that Zion car park. We filled up our bottles, flasks, but we didn't account that the way out meant it was going to take a bit longer because we actually had to climb right up and out of the canyon again. And so we ended up getting to the ute, and we were just parched, weren't we? Our eyes were probably bulging out of our head. We needed some hydration ASAP. And so we smashed our drinks in the car, but we probably ran out. And then I remember we stopped off at a gas station. Remember that?
Yeah.
And I was like, I went to the big gulp machine and I just filled up my big gulp. And then I ended up drinking
slushy.
Half.
Wasn't it slushy?
Yeah, it was slushy, but yeah, whatever. And then I ended up drinking half of it by the time I got out the door. So I went back in and asked her if I could buy another one. She's like, oh, don't worry, just go and refill it. And I was like, oh, you're such a lovely lady. She could see by my face that I was absolutely wrecked and needed some sugar ASAP, I reckon.
Yeah, and then we had amazing Mexican food out there. That's the thing about here in Southern Utah. We got some really good Mexican food. So excited to share more, you know, training and Mexican food with you.
Yeah, that's how I was going to round out that story. But yeah, the Mexican was really good. So really looking forward to it.
Well, yeah, I have just enjoyed this conversation so much, just both asking questions and then listening to you two talk, and just getting stoked for you to come over here, Dan, with Michelle and train some more prior to Western States. And you know, we'll link to all your socials there, Instagram, Strava, to your Substack in the show notes. So please go check those out. Give Dan a follow if you're not following him already. And Dan, just again, I admire you so much for what you do for the sport, as you know, what you do as a representative of your country, New Zealand. So really, really cool. And as we wrap up here, I wanted to ask you the final question that we ask all our guests on the Headlamp Hour podcast. And that is, what mantra or saying serves as your headlamp through the dark or difficult moments of life?
I just keep telling myself, just keep pushing. You know, it's the same thing that I was thinking going over that whole foray over in UTMB. Just keep pushing, just one more step, you know, one step in front of the other. It's like you're always going to come through to the other side and things get easier. They might get harder again, but then they get easier again. It comes in waves. So you just got to keep pushing and then things will work out.
Keep pushing. Love it. Well, thank you so much again, Dan, for the conversation, and really look forward to seeing you this summer.
Yeah.
Thanks,
thanks
mate.
Buddy. Thanks for having, thanks for coming on. And yeah, it's time for me and Nate to get to bed because we got to wake up at 5 a.m. and go for a long run or a run together and do some more headlamp hour. So,
well, I was going to say, fellas, it's been a pleasure. Thanks for having me on, Nate, and I'm wishing you guys all the best, and I will be following along for Black Canyon as well. So have fun out there and give it heaps. Good on you guys.
Thanks, Dan.